Hi, this is Danielle from The Jealous Curator, and this is episode 90 of Art for Your Ear. This episode is supported by Saatchi Art, the world's largest curated online gallery offering original art by independent artists from around the world. You can pop over and visit them at saatchiart.com. Today, I'm talking to an LA-based artist that I was lucky enough to meet in person just a couple of weeks ago when I was there with Martha Rich hawking our book. Aaron Smith is an amazing painter and also an associate professor and associate chair of the illustration department at Art Center, such an amazing school. Aaron arranged for Martha and I to talk to the students there. He invited us to his place for dinner with their whole awesome, amazing California crew, and he made us the strongest coffee I've ever had in my entire life. What's not to love, right? I liked him the second I met him, and I was stunned by his work as soon as I saw it. Oh, and I wanted to touch his fabulous beard the moment I met him too, but I didn't. I controlled myself. The other thing I didn't do was ask him a zillion questions about his work. So that's what's going to happen today. Ready? Calling Aaron in LA. Hi, Aaron.
Hello there.
I'm so excited to get you on here. Because we just met like 2 weeks ago for the first time.
That's true.
And I thought you were awesome.
Thank you.
And you were nice enough to invite me over with your whole crew to have dinner at your place. And when I walked in there, because Martha Rich told me you have to see his art collection. And I walked in and I saw all of it, but all the ones that I was like, oh, who did that? You were like, oh, me. So obviously you have to come on and talk about all your art.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. So here's what I know about you. You have an amazing beard. You have lots of tattoos. You are, what's your title at Art Center?
I'm the associate chair of the illustration department.
Right. I have questions about that.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, I'm going to actually ask you that and then we'll go back in time to your childhood. But do you do illustration or do you just do fine art?
Well, I was trained as an illustrator and I have done illustration and I do it periodically. I did a off-Broadway poster this last year for a John Lennon tribute show, and I've done some new pieces for The New Yorker and whatnot. But mostly I'm a fine art painter, but there was a big fork in the road at one point after illustrating where I decided I wanted to be a gallery artist.
Aha. Okay. So now we'll go back in time until we get to the fork. So I know you're a twin.
I am.
And then you have two older brothers. Is that right?
I do.
Okay.
And my twin brother and I were the youngest, and and we were the weird artistic types.
Oh, he's artistic too?
He is. He actually is the chair of the illustration department at California College of Art in San Francisco.
What?
Yeah, I'm not competitive, but we both have gone down similar paths.
And are you identical?
We're fraternal, but if you saw us, you'd probably, my beard's longer, but.
But you're not competitive though.
But I'm not competitive. But you might get us mixed up.
So yeah, that's what Martha said. She said you guys were pretty. Okay, so that's crazy that you both have basically the same job. Okay, so when you were kids, what was it like? Were you always making stuff, the both of you, or was your whole family artsy, or what was that like?
Well, the family was art-oriented. I mean, we would go to museums, and my dad's a big, way more like, nature guy, and my mom was a musician. She still teaches music to kids in grade school.
Wow.
But then we sort of sprung out of the womb, I think, kind of interested in art. So we were super nerdy. I mean, we would like make museums displays in our house, and we did crafts. We're entrepreneurial, so we're very conspiratorial, artistically conspiratorial together.
I think that just became the title of this episode. And then, so what were your older brothers like? Just not into it? Were they sporty, or were they just music, or what were they doing?
Yeah, my oldest brother was sort of math science nerd, and then he got accepted to Berkeley, but then what kind of dropped out. He wasn't super interested. And then he pined forever over wanting to be a photographer. And he had a sort of a late in life fork in the road where he's now living with his wife in Italy, in Pisa, Italy, taking photographs and giving lessons in photography. So he sort of found his artistic self later
on. And then the next brother down?
The next brother down is he's autistic, so he doesn't really have, you know, he doesn't really have a full vocation. But yeah, he's more interested in, I don't know, whatever he's interested in at the time.
But right.
Not super vocationally.
Got it.
Right.
Wow. So as you're growing up and you guys are just nerds and making stuff, did you just always assume you would go to art school or illustration, or was that always just the plan?
Kind of. I mean, I don't know. You know, we were in, you know, the gifted and talented thing, whatever it was, which I was thankful that it separated math from the rest, because I would have been I was in bonehead math and then in the gifted other stuff. And so I had a really great teacher named Mrs. Mazzoni. I always have to give her props. She was awesome and terrifying. She was a little bit like Cruella de Vil meets like Madame Suzatska. So she kind of terrified me. She also was amazing. She would actually smoke at the door of the classroom and scandalize us all.
What year was this? Was this in high school?
It was in sixth grade.
Oh, sixth grade. Oh, my gosh.
You know, the 70s. But she, but I remember there was one day when we were doing these big, long reports, and we had to have charts, and we had to have graphs, and we had to have bibliographies and the whole thing. And, of course, I wasn't doing any of that. I was working in class. She was playing opera at the time, of course. And we were all working, and I, of course, was working on the cover of my
or, me too. My covers were the best.
Yes, exactly. I threw everything in there, and occasionally an illustration. But I always knew where she was in the room because she smoked so heavily that you could always smell her sort of coming. And she came up behind me, and I was like, "Oh crap!" And she took the cover off my desk and went up to the front of the class, turned off the opera, and class, and she said, "So Aaron is not done with his report, but he's working on his cover. What do you all think?" And of course, all the sixth graders sort of crucified me and went, you know, attacked because they thought they were being given permission to go after the artist. And then she stopped them and she said, "You know what? Actually, I know Aaron's going to do really well on his thing, but I just wanted to show you what he's doing here." And she did a whole critique of my piece and said, "He's doing this, and I really like the way he used the color here, and he did that." And she says, "You know what? I'm thinking that Aaron just might grow up to be an artist, and I just wanted you all to see it." And she turned on the music, and she put it back on my desk, and she kind of changed my life at that moment. She was amazing.
Wow, that gave me chills.
Yeah, it still gives me goosebumps when I talk about myself. And I went back to thank her in high school, which, you know, in high school, you're usually way too cool to go back to sixth grade. Mm-hmm. But I went back to thank her, and I was glad I did because she passed away, of course, from lung cancer a couple of years later. But I was always glad that I had checked in with her.
What did she say when you thanked her?
She's funny because she... She said that didn't happen very often and that she really appreciated that. And of course it was awkward for me, but I said, you know, "I just want to let you know," excuse me. And I put it off, but she sort of said it. My family was encouraging, but I have to say before, and I'm going to sort of diss my mom for a second.
No problem. That happens.
Yes. And this is, you know, in your book that we talk, you know, there are these voices, right, that are these little messages that we get that sometimes we carry with us. My mom pulled me aside at one point and she said, "I don't think you're the artist. I think Owen's the artist." And I was like, it might have been reverse psychology, because I sort of jumped up and I was like, hell no. And I sort of pursued it a little bit harder, because I was feeling competitive.
Yeah, and you're like, and watch my beard, watch and see how long my beard gets too.
Exactly right.
Oh my gosh, I kind of can't believe she said that.
Yeah, well, I think she, you know, I think parents mean well. I think they think they're going to save you from yourself or whatever.
That's the same as my mom. My mom is an artist, and I actually had her on the podcast as a guest, mm-hmm. and asked her what she thought when I was in science and I switched into fine art. And she said, oh, I was really proud of you and excited because I knew that's who you were. And I was like, really? Because the way I remembered it, she seemed very hesitant. And I think what it was is that she didn't want me to face all the pitfalls that she had faced.
Sure.
And all the hard stuff. But it came across to me as, you can't do it.
Yeah.
But yeah. I mean, I know she would never mean that. And I'm sure your mom wouldn't mean, you know, that either. But the way that you take it at this, that certain point in your life is pretty influential.
Well, I think it's true, because when you're a young person, you just have so many fewer life experiences to give you information. So everything that comes through your mind from other people looms really large. And I think so I'm pretty cautious, I think, when I talk to people about, you know, being too negative, because I realize they often are just waiting for someone to give them permission to do something that they've always wanted. And if they don't get it, or they're told something else, they could very well make another choice.
Yeah. It's interesting that you've ended up becoming a teacher.
Yeah. I probably have to give Mrs. Mazzoni credit for that too, because I think she, I realized how important that role could be.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
High fives to Mrs. Mazzoni.
We love her. Mm-hmm. We love her.
Okay, so now you've thanked her, and are you heading off to art school?
Well, yeah, we started, I had then I was in high school, and of course relating more to the teacher, a couple of teachers, than to a lot of the other students, I don't know, just being a nerd. And I weirdly hung out in the office a lot, and with my guidance counselor, and they had a couple of catalogs for art schools, and there was SVA, there was Parsons, which had a campus, I think it was Otis Parsons at the time, they had a campus on each coast. Mm. I remember they had an orange on one side of the catalog and an apple on the other, and then an art center catalog. And again, like, that's all those were the only options that I knew, because those were the catalogs.
And where did you grow up? Where were you at this point?
This is the San Francisco Bay Area.
Oh, okay. So you weren't that far away from those things.
Yeah. But I kind of wanted to go, I didn't want to study locally. I wanted to have the, you know, college experience. So before high school ended, and after my mom, you know, I got over my mom's cautionary words, it was decided that we would look at art schools. And so my brother and I and my dad took a tour. You know, we came to Southern California and looked at a few schools. And Owen and I both loved Art Center. And then, of course, we were competing for, you know, oh, that's my school and that's your school. And so we both applied and got accepted. And I was happy, because I was told it was kind of tough to get in. I think I decided, we talked to counselors there, and they had said that it was sort of standard practice back in the day for the students to be a little bit older. And they said, you should go to junior college. So I spent almost 2 years in a community college in Fremont, you know, and I dove into the fine art department there, and really, and then did some of the general ed stuff too, but really tried to get my feet wet. And that's when I submitted my portfolio, got accepted. And then my parents did this, another funny trick. They, after we got accepted, they took this mystery trip over a weekend, and then came back and announced that they had bought a condo, which is back at this 100 years ago where you could do these kind of things. And they were like, oh, surprise, we bought a condo because it's cheaper if you're both going to Art Center for us to buy this condo, and then we'll sell it when you're done. And so you're all living together. And I was like, you know, what? And so we had one car. We had all the same classes together, and we shared an apartment and fought like crazy.
Oh, man.
Yeah. And I love my brother, and you know, but I hadn't seen so much of him since the womb. So I
probably not the college experience you thought you were going to have.
Yeah, it wasn't the college experience. So I petitioned with my parents to get my brother a roommate. And then with that money, I got a really terrible, tiny little apartment that I was really happy to have because it was mine. And then, you know, did that a little bit, and then made friends at school, and I was roommates with Rob Clayton, who was my dearest friend.
And I didn't know that.
Yeah, and he and I were roommates in school, and now we teach at Art Center. Now I just jumped ahead, but there you go.
Yeah, that's so crazy, because I just met him 2 weeks ago, too. And of course, like, I knew of both of you guys. That's so funny.
Yeah, we were tight all the way through.
And so were you there for illustration? Is that what you were?
Yeah. Yeah. And I wanted illustration mostly, well, I think sometimes people pick illustration because they think it's more stable than being a fine artist, the dreaded fine art. But also, I knew that it had a good drawing and painting program, and so that I could get a lot of good foundation skills that I wanted. I really liked illustration. I was interested in publishing. And I started out doing that. When I was in school, there was a competition, and Nancy Duckworth from LA Times Magazine was a judge, and she liked my work, and she asked if I had a portfolio, and I said yes. And she said, okay, I'll see you on Monday to review your portfolio to see if I can give you some work. And I thanked her, and then I had a nervous breakdown because I didn't have a portfolio.
I was just going to say, that was a lie, wasn't it?
It's a total lie. And so I
fake it till you make it, baby.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
So I scrambled, and I shut up with it, and faked it. And she gave me like a 4 illustration job. It was a cover story, and I did it right in the middle of finals, and just, you know, but pushed power through it. And
wow.
So I'm an illustrator, you know.
Was that right before you graduated, or were you just like?
It was just before I graduated.
Wow.
Yeah. So
what did your competitive twin think of that?
Oh, I don't know. He tends to go silent when we get too competitive.
Right.
But he, of course, was doing his own thing really amazingly. And of course, he actually pursued illustration right out of school and was getting work pretty quickly. So he's, you know, he's done really well, and he's consistently been an illustrator ever since graduating. He's done a dozen New Yorker covers. He's done 3 children's books. He does public art mural.
Wow.
He's done a lot of great stuff. It's all cute. It's fine. It's all good.
What a family. Okay. I feel like we're getting close to the fork.
We're getting close to the fork. So, I was still roommates with Rob and his future wife, Rita.
Mm-hmm.
And we all decided that it was time for us to go to New York, because that's sort of what you did back in the day, because that's where publishing was. And that sounded like a great adventure. So we all moved out there, and I moved in with 2 young women who had graduated from Art Center that I didn't know, but I thought, okay, they're in the family. So I moved in with 2 girls and a pit bull. Bad sitcom, but anyway.
I was gonna say, maybe that's the title of this episode.
Exactly. And we lived in Tribeca, which is before, you know, when artists actually could live in Tribeca. It was actually an enormous space, but it was completely raw. There were no walls. It was like camping. But I was, you know, super happy and excited to be there. And we all were just scrambling to make rent. I worked at Pearl Paint and worked for the Village Voice, doing paste up and stuff like that, and doing the odd illustration. But then I found myself really looking at museums more and more. And I used to go to the Metropolitan Museum, and back in the day, it was sort of a pay. There was a suggested entry fee, money, you know. So I would sometimes bring it, you know, 25 cents and get in. Other days when I had more money, I'd bring it. But I kind of lived in the museums, and stuck my nose up to a lot of paintings and thought, well, you know, this is sort of what I really want to do. And so I started just doing these paintings on my own, kind of large scale things, not even knowing where I was really specifically why I was doing them. But I think I was sneaking up on this idea that I was going to be a gallery artist.
Hmm. And were they illustrative? Like, were they kind of like your illustration work, or was it a total departure?
Well, part of the reason illustration was tough for me was I was really influenced by sort of old masters, by like Baroque painting. So I was painting these kind of dark, dramatic, realistic oil paintings for illustration, which is really hard because the turnaround is crazy quick. So I was doing a lot of like heavy metal album covers, as you know, they like to dark. Which really wasn't me. And I was doing a lot of some editorial, like political intrigue, like the darker side of things, because a Baroque palette is kind of dark.
You'd be all set right now.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Perfect. But then, so I was doing these kind of almost like very fairly traditional, large scale, figurative pieces and I started doing, the subject was, I was taking my subject matter from like nursery school rhymes from the Victorian era, and then I was using like 17th century painting technique, 19th century subject matter, and then with contemporary models. So it's kind of like sampling.
Mm.
It's sort of complicated, but anyway. So they weren't really illustrative. They were more like, yeah, big traditional oil paintings.
And they were big?
They were big. For illustration, they were big because oftentimes the figures were life-size. So I guess they were.
Mm-hmm.
And then at that point, we all had kind of done our 2 years in New York, and it was fun, but I think everyone realized it's easier to live in California than it is in New York. And so I moved back, and then Robin Frieda eventually moved back, and that's when I got a job at La Luz de Jesus Gallery.
Oh, I love that gallery.
And they, of course, Billy Shire, the owner, is a big champion of illustrators. And so I got myself a job there. I was an installer, and my friend Alex Sloan, who's been my gallerist for years since, she's the gallery director. She and I were friends. We befriended each other, and we snuck my slides in. And I was at work, and I knew that Billy was going to review the the new artists. And they came out of the meeting, and she said he didn't want to ever know who the artist was until he saw the slides. And he said Alex told me that Billy had liked the work, but he didn't think it was appropriate for the gallery. And so I sort of licked my wounds and kept working. But then I had a painting in the back room, and a collector came to purchase another artist's work and saw that painting and wanted to buy it. And of course, Billy and I looked across at each other, and he offered a price, and we sold the painting. And then, of course, that's when he decided to offer me a show. Knew I could sell it. So then, for my first show, I hung it myself.
Because you were the installer.
So I was the installer.
Yeah.
And then I sat and worked in the gallery for the whole month, just waiting for something, for people to say mean things without realizing that I was the maker. But we actually sold, the whole show sold out, which was kind of crazy. They were relatively inexpensive at the time. And then I kind of knew that was a go, and we scheduled the next one. And after that, I got introduced to a gallery to Ann Nathan Gallery in Chicago, and So I, for a few years, I was showing between LA and Chicago. So I had a kind of a go of it. And it was all that kind of dark chiaroscuro work. And I, you know, developed, I guess, a fan base over, from that. And then I had another fork in the road. And it, because my influences started to change, and I guess I sort of moved up through art history, and I started to look at modernism, and I started to look at post-impressionism and fauvism, and I started to reach this crisis. And by then I was showing at Copland Del Rio Gallery in LA, and I'd had a couple shows with them. And I finally said to them, because I'd been showing like every year or like every 6 months to a year. So I was just very, you know, very specifically working for the next show. And I said, I kind of need a break because I don't know where my work's going. Actually, there was.
Yeah, were you worried about like that fan base being like, hey, why are you changing?
Yeah. Well, and my work was slowly shifting. And it was just, it was kind of like I was turning the lights on, like I did more outdoor subjects, and then the palette was lightening, and then I would kind of integrate some sort of surreal images in the pictures, but there was still sort of the same skill set. And my gallery in Chicago, she got really nervous about it. And I remember my last show with them, and I love her dearly, but I think she got nervous. And we were standing in the gallery getting ready, and we laid out the show, and we're going over the pricing. And there were collectors that were coming to preview that had bought my work before. And they came in, and there was a guy that made a beeline for a painting. And that's always a good sign because he just crossed the room right to it. And she looked over my shoulder and she said, I can do better on the price on that. We haven't even finished prices. And I knew that she really wasn't enthused, or she didn't know what to do. And then another collector at the opening said to me, or before the opening, it was at the preview, he said, what are you going to do when none of this art sells? And I was like, well, thanks for coming.
Oh my God.
Guess I'll keep painting. And so I kind of knew I was at a crossroads. And I thought it was a little bit weird. I mean, we sold work, but I felt like I was being told that I was alienating my collectors by changing. So that's when I went to my LA gallery and said, I need to just have a little space to see what happens in the studio, because it's kind of going, I don't know where it's going exactly. And I, you know, I was afraid I would just sort of give in and do another show like I'd been making before. So I didn't schedule anything for 3 years, which is really scary.
Wow.
And by then I was teaching. So this helped me kind of maintain my, you know, lifestyle, my fancy lifestyle.
At Art Center? Were you just at Art Center from the get-go? Yeah.
So I painted, and I didn't know how long it was going to take, but about 3 years later, I called my gallery back and said, okay, I'm ready for a studio visit. And Elena Del Rio, who was the gallery director, came, and she looked at the work, and she said, this is really different. And I was like, yeah, it is. And she says, you know what? I think it's strong, and I'm willing to take a risk, and let's do a show together. So we did a show, and it was kind of the biggest one I'd done because I had 3 years of painting. Of course, I had made a lot of bad paintings in that time, which I carefully edited with. But there still were a lot of pieces, so it was kind of a big show, and it ended up being the best show that I mean the best received show that I'd done, but none of the same collectors. I don't think there was a single collector that bought my work before. Huh. But it was kind of amazing because I thought, well, wait a minute. Yeah, I guess I did alienate those collectors, and I found new ones. And so that kind of changed things for me, because I realized that I think following your instinct. First of all, in the long run, we only live once, being an artist is too hard to live in compromise in that.
Yeah,
that it's, there are easier ways of making a living, so that all bets are off. So, But it was kind of a nice moment to realize that my instincts were right for me, and it actually sort of worked out.
Yeah, I love that, because you can't. I've talked to a few other artists that have had followings, and then they want to change their work, and they're basically told, "Well, you can't." And it's just like, what do you mean? Like, I'm going to live for however many more years, and I have to just keep doing the same thing forever? And I guess, yeah, it would be terrifying, but you have to, I mean, that's the whole thing about being an artist. You have to make what it is you want to make.
Right. Well, and I think, you know, a lot of people's perceptions are that if you're a fine artist, then you really do whatever you want. But, you know, when you're exhibiting if you have a certain amount of success, success has its kind of limitations in that you raise people's expectations, and then collectors and gallerists get nervous that you're going to devalue what you've already done by making something new, and I think even collectors will do that. Some of the most hostile reaction I got to change was from collectors, because they thought I was negating what they owned by doing something else. You know, and I would love to have said, if I was a little braver, I probably would have said, well, actually, I think it might be interesting if you would follow me through these different stages, because then you could have a lot of different kinds of work of mine, whatever.
Yeah.
But it's, you know.
And then the whole collection will be worth so much more, because it'll be they'll have the whole retrospective.
Exactly right. Exactly. you can just collect, there's going to be so much variety, you just have to collect me. You can have.
Yeah. Here you go. Just give me all of your money. Just give me all of your money.
Just sign up now. but I realized, and then when that happened, you know, my galleries also would say, oh, you know what? We love your work. But we love it when you paint women, because when female figures sell better than male figures. And I was like, oh, well, okay. And you know, especially female nudes, but then we don't, you know, but maybe we don't really see their face exactly, so you can project and decide who she is. And I'm like, okay, first of all, that sounds a little bit sexist, but also that's not who I am. And so that, I think that subject matter and a lot of things, I mean, the world has changed now. And I've seen a lot of shifts because I've been doing this for a long time. And one of the things is finding your tribe. I mean, the internet has really, I don't know if I said that, the internet, like it's a new
big net. Yeah. It's this thing. Break it down for us, Aaron.
Yeah. I invented it, by the way.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. It wasn't, what's his name? Anyway, I don't have to appeal to everybody, because there are a lot of artists out there, and more power to all of them, because they'll cover those other subjects. Do you know what I mean? That everyone thinks they're the most popular one.
Yeah, you know? And you don't have to bend as much to what the galleries want or whatever.
Right. It's ridiculous for anyone to think that that's the way people operate, that they only buy what's in the gallery that they walk past. Like, that's not the world anymore. And so, or even their favorite gallery, everyone feels permission, has been given permission to search the world for things that they like, and they search them, and their blogs that recommend them. And there's,
I know of one,
right?
Yeah.
I've heard of but you know, so, and I think, I always tell my students this, that, you know, follow your bliss, and then research, because I think you can find people who will respond to your work, and they'll find you. Just put yourself out there. And I think that's, and I think the School of Hard Knocks for me, you know, making those decisions and going through the fear and sometimes waiting for people to respond, but then things kind of working out, has given me a lot of confidence. Not a lot, but enough, I guess, to keep going, to just sort of decide, yeah, I'm not going to be everybody's artist. That's not really the point. None of us are.
Mm-hmm.
I actually enjoy the intimacy of really living in my own head and making the kinds of work that I want, and then having people respond for different reasons, but from all over the world, because this little silver gray box helps me, find those people.
Mm-hmm. I know it's just amazing. I always say like, it's just so, because I'm from the days of the slides as well, you know, going around after I graduated with my slides, and I hated it. And it's so nice online because it's just, you can put stuff out and people all over the world see it. They can contact you directly if they want. Like the world, yeah, that has really, really changed.
Yeah.
And you know, the other thing I was going to say about your tribe is not only have you probably found that online and like, you know, the collectors who are interested in you, but you've kind of been, as far as confidence goes, living with your tribe, like, you know, having Rob and people like that in your life for so long.
Oh, for sure.
You know, is so amazing to have these really talented people around you who also have your back. Like,
oh, I love that. And yeah. I love them for it. And the thing is, and we all do pretty different things. And we're so, I mean, I don't know if there's like a California school or whatever. I mean, again, the regionalism is kind of over anyway, but my friends, you know, we influence each other, but we really have different kinds of practices. And when I teach, of course, my job is to try to help each artist find their own voice and championing that. I don't like the sort of this idea of being, you know, occasionally there are teachers that are kind of like guru types and everyone kind of starts painting like them or making that work. And I'm not interested in that kind of interaction at all.
You want them to find themselves, basically.
Oh, yeah. It makes teaching so much more interesting because mm-hmm. I don't want to see any more me. I want to see all the, I want my mind expanded by all the work that everyone brings.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That leads me to my next question. And then I also want to say something about the California school. I'm going to say that first, actually. So it was so nice you guys came to when Martha and I did our thing at Skylight, and then we went back to your beautiful house to see your art collection and eat Thai food, which was amazing. And I was sitting there thinking, I can't believe, like, if somebody had told me before I started my blog that, you know, these years later I'd be sitting in LA in this house surrounded by like you and Mark Todd and Esther Pearl Watson and Martha Rich, I would have been like, what? You know, like, and you know, and Rob Clayton had been at the talk earlier, and it was just like, that is just crazy to me. And I think you guys are this really cool, you know, California school, and you are all so different. But I love all of your work. But yeah, it's so different. But you guys have such a cool friendship and support of each other. It was such a pleasure to be around and just to listen to you guys joke around and talk, but then to see everybody's different kind of work. It was just really the highlight of my trip. I loved it.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, when you're in the middle of something, you don't appreciate it. Although I really do appreciate, you know, my studio is where Martha's studio used to be, and she used to share a studio. Martha was a student of mine.
Yeah.
You know, she's my age, but so we really bonded because, you know, but she shared a studio with Caleb Brown, who I went to school with years earlier, and then and with Mark and Esther and Sutter Salazar. And,
yeah, I love him too.
Yeah, and there was a they had a whole energy in that studio, the Yosemite studio, and now there's a new group of us that are there. But I really like the continuity. Celia was the other artist that was there at the time, but I love the continuity of that play, of that space, and its connection to Art Center, but also just the kind of consistency that everyone's really friends with everybody else, and then you get, you know, it's weird because I met Mark and Esther in New York.
I was wondering about that because they were there then too.
Yeah, I met them after I'd moved from New York when my brother was living in New York. He did a couple of years after I did, and then a couple of years later, all of a sudden, Martha. A few years later, you know, I teach Martha, and then Martha suddenly in the studio with Mark and Esther when after they came back. So there's just this. Yeah, we just keep colliding. And of course, now we've all been friends for years, and we pretty much see each other almost every day. And I, and I think that's a really good, for me, it's super healthy to not feel so crazy in this, because it's, you know, being an artist can be a very solitary thing. And I think it's great to sort of look over your shoulder and say, oh, I love what you're doing there. Like, you know, that looks so much different than it did yesterday. How do you feel? And, you know, and we can talk about whatever we're doing, and we can go to each other's shows. And then many of us are teaching, and we're establishing curriculum. So there is this kind of, consistency, that, you know, and we vacation together. And,
yeah,
you know,
I know. It's just, it's so cool what you guys have. And, yeah, don't take it for granted, because it's so special. And I was just thrilled that I got to like have a little peek at it for.
Yeah. Well, you're in the family too. I mean, it makes total sense.
I have to go to Art Center though.
No, it's open. It's open.
So then I want to go back and ask you, so teaching, I taught one semester and my God, it was the hardest thing I've ever done. And so tiring, because I was going to change each of those students' lives forever with my gift of teaching. And Esther and I were joking about that, because, you know, you just give and give and then you're so tired. So do you find that teaching, does it kind of like charge you creatively? Like when you see these kids doing stuff that you're like, yeah, you're finding your own voice. Does that charge you up? Or by the end of the day, are you just like, oh my God, I'm too tired to paint?
I think there are days when I'm too tired to paint. And, you know, I'm also an administrator. I'm a teacher and an administrator and an artist. So I kind of have these three jobs running. And sometimes the administration part maybe is more tiring.
Yeah.
Because there's office politics and we're sort of fighting for our department, you know.
Yeah, and your meetings and
all those meetings. Yeah. And then there's teaching, and teaching maybe more often. Although I love the people that I work with in our department, in the office, but I think teaching is more artistically fulfilling, because you are talking shop and you can sort of see, you know, it's almost like when you go to Disneyland and you see like the parents being super goofy because they're realizing they're with their kids who are experiencing this stuff for the first time, and they can kind of do that again, over again with them.
Mm-hmm.
I feel that way with teaching, because I can sort of see, I can hopefully relate to their struggle, but also I can sort of relive those first those sort of synapses coming together.
Mm-hmm.
Over again, and they could be frustrating because sometimes it doesn't come as easily. Or, you know, there's a lot of psychology involved in mentoring people, and, you know, people could be prickly, but we have good students at school, and I think, everyone's really committed. So I think in those terms, it's a really good place, but it does take a lot of energy.
Yeah.
So it's a sort of a mixed bag, like almost like physically I can just be really spent, but then probably more for a little bit from a distance, I get so much more out of it than I give.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I can see that. Yeah.
The fact is there's more of them than me. Do you know what I mean? And so there's more youthful energy than I can muster in myself anymore. So, it's a mixed bag, because I also know, there are times when I look at my career and I think, you know, I could be farther if I spent more time in the studio, or if I, you know, went to, you know, got myself, I have a commitment. Maybe if I went to that, that art fair in New York or whatever it is, maybe I'd be farther along. But, I think the balance is pretty important for me.
Yeah. And I think like what you're doing for all the students, like Martha was telling me just how amazing you are with all of them. And that, like, you know, somebody's going to come and thank you one day, just like you thank your teacher, you know, and I'm sure you've already had that happen.
Well, and, you know, I think I'm luckier maybe, and all of us here are luckier than most grade school teachers, because when the students finish here, they're really our peers. And so we, and of course you have to get your ego out of the way too, because you know, there's plenty of times when I've thought, wow, like they're accomplishing things that it took me years to do, and they're doing it right out of the gate. Or, oh, they're in a gallery I wish I was invited to be in. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm, so totally.
You have to check your ego. I mean, my job is to try to help the students do better than I ever could in what they do. That's, and if I don't have that attitude, then I'm in the wrong line of business, because I should not be consciously or subconsciously getting in anyone's way. Do you know what I mean?
I had a few teachers like that were really didn't like the top students, because you could tell that they were like they felt competitive with them, and it was like, well, then what are you doing here?
In the wrong line of work.
Yeah.
You know, and there are times when it's like, ouch, you know, like, and sometimes students don't appreciate how lucky they are, because they have that sort of youthful arrogance, and they're like, oh yeah, I deserve this. And it's like, you do, but you like that, you're really lucky.
Yeah. Pay your dues, you little so-and-so.
Yeah.
Go to New York and live in a bare bones apartment for 2 years.
Exactly. But I also think that, for all of us, I think there are highs and lows, and, you know, and my job at school is never to say, oh, I have this all figured out and just follow my lead and you'll be fine. It's like, it's more, because I don't know everything, and I'm still learning, and I'm still trying to figure it out. And I think sometimes the students get freaked out about that, because they sort of look at you like, oh, you're supposed to have all the answers. And I'm like, no, the answer is none of us have all the answers, and the answers are different for every person.
Mm-hmm. So, and you'll never have all the answers, hopefully.
Well, who wants to know what you're going to do in a year? I think sometimes students come to school and they think, oh, I'm going to consolidate this, and I'm going to get all these skills, and I'm going to ace this, and then I'll just coast from then on. And it's like, being an artist is a completely different animal. It's like you're constantly at your own frontier, hopefully for the rest of your life, and reevaluating and struggling and learning. Otherwise, I don't know. It's, again, there are other ways that are more stable and straightforward. But being an artist is that. It's just, I feel like I'm trying to help my students get acclimated to continually learning, just get oriented to this kind of to the craziness of what it, and to be somebody who can mostly say, I know, you know what, I wonder if you're not feeling this way. And then the students say, how do you know? And it's like, because I feel that way. Mm-hmm. And they're like, I thought you'd be over that by now. And I say, no, that's not the way it works.
I know. That was a big aha moment for me when I did Creative Block, and all of these pros that I talked to were like, oh no, I get blocked. And, you know, oh no, I hear an inner critic. And I was like, what? Like, I could not believe it. And it took 100 pounds off my shoulders.
Oh yeah. Learning to forgive yourself, I think, is the only way that you can really be present, because otherwise, you know, you're comparing yourself, and you're all this hierarchical thinking is not very useful.
No, and then you just stop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you stop playing. And that's, you know, for me, this is about play.
Mm-hmm.
It's about that very healthy, trying to get to that very healthy place of being, you know, in the zone or whatever, or being in that moment where you're kind of lose yourself, and you're very present and you're on. Well, there's a lot of work in your life that needs to happen to get to the balance that you can try to maximize that amount of time. But you know, 95% of our lives don't look like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. And I liked when you said when you took that 3 years and there was a lot of stuff that wasn't good.
Oh yeah.
You know, but if you hadn't given yourself the permission to do the bad stuff,
yep,
and just had this pressure on yourself that you were supposed to create this whole new collection that these collectors were going to love, like, oh my God, you would have just been paralyzed.
Exactly. And, you know, art history has helped me with that. Do you know what I mean? When you read the biographies of the great artists, you know, Rembrandt was bankrupt when he died. Do you know what I mean? And he had, you know, and Van Gogh, you know, never sold a piece. And, you know, that scares people away. But on the other hand, I think we live in a time when actually we can be more rewarded, because it's such a pluralistic time, and you can find an audience and actually find more support. Because mm-hmm. if you were Van Gogh, you had to know his brother was an art dealer and they couldn't sell the work. And it's But it's like, if you, you know, back in the day, it's like if you were Picasso, if you knew Picasso and his five friends and you were sort of allowed into that inner circle, you had a chance. But if you were in the wrong town, you know, without those things, you were out of luck. And now I think you can live wherever you want. You can make the kind of work that you want and people will find you. And yeah. I think it's actually in a weird way more stable than it used to be. But even within that, you have to forgive yourself for not always being on and not always and for redirecting. I mean, I'm really a big advocate for no regrets. Like regrets are just you looking backwards. Like there's no, it's not useful.
No, there's no point.
Yeah. But on the other hand, I'm also somebody who's a really big on no excuses. You know, I don't want to say, oh, I don't, you know, that's not perfect because I didn't have that material or this, you know, I had this stress or whatever. I don't want to ever, you know, talk about my work in those terms. So it's sort of like I don't want to give excuses for them it not being perfect, but I also don't want to have regrets about what I should have done or what went wrong. It's sort of like just that weirdo thing of trying to be in the moment as much as you can.
Yeah, I was going to say it goes back to the play thing immediately.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is so good. I could do this for like 5 more hours, but you probably can't. So I want to ask you one more thing, and then we're going to go to the not-so-speedy speed round.
What you got?
Beards.
Beards.
What is the deal? You have the most amazing beard. I'm going to put a picture of it in the post because it's stunning. And you have a lot of paintings of beards.
Yeah, I do.
Now, is that your art history love thing, or is that, like, what's going on there?
It's a little bit of that. I, you know, one of the realizations that I had was that one of the subjects I want to take on, after I got all those, the gallerists and the collectors out of my head, was that I wanted to talk about, sort of masculinity, about this idea of gender, sort of a gender thing. And, it's funny because this started kind of before beards became super trendy. every hipster had a beard. Because I've had a beard for a long time, but I collected Victorian photography of these sort of dandies and early, and I really have a lot of nostalgia for the 19th century, where men sort of would be all gussied up for these photographs, and I collected them, and I thought, why am I not painting these after a while? And I thought, well, because when I reemerged, I had a really different palette. I had a much more Fauvist palette. And it was sort of a way of me relating. As I was studying the artists of that period, the 19th century and the beginning of the 20th century, beards, you know, every other artist, male artist had a beard. And so I've been an admirer of that. And so I thought, well, why don't I go back to the source? So I started painting them sort of as if, they were, you know, it's sort of a postmodernist palette, painting of a very antique image. And I love their kind of seriousness in the photographs. They're very, cause they have to sit there forever when they're being, so they're very serious. But then I thinking about, I also collect, you probably saw in the house, I collect artwork from Papua New Guinea.
Yes.
And Huli Wigmen, for instance, who live in the highlands of New Guinea, they take their cue from nature, and they adorn themselves, and they make these wigs over years and years, made with human hair, sort of woven across this basket. Then they put all these birds of paradise feathers, and so. They're sort of looking at nature, where the males in nature are the ones, you know, the peacocks are the
right,
ones.
Right, right, yeah.
So I'm sort of painting them, the Victorian gentleman in this, with that sort of palette. And then, of course, beards are sort of in it. It's interesting how there's been, speaking of your tribe, there's sort of this intersection that sort of happened in my work where there's this sort of Victoriana thing that's sort of been in the air. And then there's like hipster culture, and there's beardo culture and bear culture. And these are all these sort of things all and all those kind of things sort of kind of collide in my audience, I guess, for the mm-hmm. work. So
that's funny. Collide is kind of a perfect word because it is. It's all those things put together because your palettes are like so, I don't know, like electric or.
Right. Well, and I think, and I think the beard is like a man's plumage in a way. That's like, but also beards are really great formal things to paint because they're so freewheeling. It's just there's variety, but, and there's texture and there's, you know, they are these kind of odd things where you can kind of go crazy with them formally, with brush strokes and color. So I think that's kind of maybe why. But, you know, I think part of the thing, I mean, this is probably the frustration that a lot of people who talk about art have with artists, is it's sort of why the beards? And it's like, well, I'll tell you when I've exhausted this and I stop painting them. You know what I mean? Like, someone's a subject to mine it for what we... You know, we're playing with it, and I don't know if we oftentimes artists really predetermine too much. It's sort of like an instinctual thing.
Yeah, I know. I've had quite a few people on that, you know, they'll say, oh, I didn't realize that until a few years after that series. The reason I was actually doing it was because this thing happened when I was a child and blah, 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 and I'd sort of retained that, and I didn't really realize until I had explored it completely and then went, oh, that's why I'm doing that.
And we do this. We sort of retroactively, we like reverse engineer it when we write our artist statement, where it's sort of like, oh, okay, this sounds like maybe is part of the reason I'm doing this. But I don't know if I ever want to know exactly, because I think it won't be so interesting to me.
Yeah, and it sort of feels like more like you're just sitting down and filling it in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just paint by numbers. Well, when I first walked into your house, and that was, you know, I was looking on the stairs and all the great work, and then I went around the corner into the living room, and there was that huge piece. I think it's on your site, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I was like, it's huge, and it's colorful, and it's amazing. It's this man with his beard, and I was like, who did that? And you were like, oh, me. And then I turned to, and there was that flower piece on the other wall, and I was like, woo, what about that? That was me. It's just like, oh, my God. So beautiful. So I'm going to put all of that in the post so I can show why my breath was taken away. But, okay, I want to ask you, first of all, before we do the not so speed round, do you have any shows coming up that we can tell people about, or is there anything going on that people can come and see your work?
I do, actually, weirdly, tomorrow night, which is March 3rd, I'm in a group show because I've just started with a new gallery in Chicago. Oh. It's the Victor Armendariz Gallery Victor Armendariz, and his website is galleryvictor.com.
Okay.
It's like a group show to present the artists that he's going to be showing. And then otherwise, I have been showing for years with Sloan Fine Art, which is Sloan without an E, and with Alex Sloan. And we sort of do these weirdo things where she used to have a gallery in New York, but now we kind of do these pop-up things. The last one I did was with a gallery that we partnered with in Chinatown.
Oh, okay.
But Sloan Fine Art is somebody, if somebody wanted to check what's going on next. But the next...
And that's in LA, right?
That's in LA, yeah.
Exactly. Okay. Okay, good to know. I'll put all of that info in the post. Okay, not so speedy speed round. Ready? Okay,
sure. Yeah.
I think I know the answer to this. Coffee or tea?
Coffee.
Yeah. You made Martha and I the strongest cup of coffee I've ever had in my entire life.
No, I know. It was a little bit much.
We were both just like, okay, no, I feel great. Okay, who wants to keep talking? Me.
Exactly. Woo. And it's black coffee, no sugar, no anything. That's me.
Oh my God. Okay, I can't do that. I like a touch of coffee with my cream. Okay, now this is going to be hard, I think. Favorite color?
Oh God. Is it dumb to say all of them? I mean, you know what it is? My favorite color is the next one. That goes with the other one. Like, I don't think I have I don't like colors. I love all colors.
See, I knew you wouldn't be able to. Why I asked you.
But it is, I'm always searching for my next favorite color, and it's always in combination with the one I put in previous. Does that make sense?
That totally makes sense. And everybody that's listening will completely understand when they see your paintings.
Yeah.
Okay, this is a several part question, but how old were you when you got your first tattoo and what was it?
Okay, I think it was 26, and it was the initials of Caravaggio.
Oh.
They're on the back. It's on the back of my neck.
That's very cool. No Tweety Birds for you.
No. Bad bands, you know. Although it's interesting because I love Caravaggio, but he's not. He was no regrets, but he's no longer my biggest influence. But that's why we get more.
That's why we keep. Exactly. Okay, so then that leads to the next part of that question: is what's your favorite tattoo that you have?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe it's my next one. No, let me see. That's a bad.
Already said that. You can't use the same answer.
You know, I think I like the ones on the back of my hands. They're gope board faces. In Papua New Guinea, they paddle these long canoes, and when the canoe dies, which means when it springs a leak, they use the wood to make these gope boards, which look kind of like surfboards, but they have these ancestor figures on them. So I have two gope ancestor faces on the back of my hands, mm-hmm. and I guess I see them the most, and they're the most bold. Although my other favorites are, I have Bill Traylor tattoos on my neck, and he was an emancipated slave who was an outsider artist who I adore his work amazingly, because I think specifically his earnestness and his mixed with his incredible shapes that he did. So those are my favorites. That's a big answer.
I know that. No, but see, that's why it's the not so speedy speed round. I can't ask questions that are fast, and I don't want to hear answers that are fast. I like the inside scoop. Okay, now this is the final one.
Yeah.
And it's going to make you a little uncomfortable.
Okay. I love it.
My son is a big fan of Would You Rathers.
Yes.
Would you rather shave your shave your beard or have your tattoos removed?
Oh. Well, I mean, I'm just going to be logical because beards grow back.
Oh, yeah. As I asked that, I was like, oh, he can just grow it back.
Yeah, it's that. I mean, although
have you seen your chin? When was the last time you saw your chin?
It's been 20 years or something. Maybe it's been that long. No, maybe a little less than that. It's been 15 years or something.
Okay, but that is a smart answer.
Yeah, I'm getting a yeah. But you know what? If I shaved my beard, I would have to spend so much time explaining myself. You know what I mean? Like, oh, I really don't want you to see my chin. I'm forced to shave the beard.
You could just say it was a performance piece.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fake it till you make it. We can, again, you know, we'll just make it up.
Yeah.
That's it. That's all my stuff.
Wow. That didn't hurt a bit.
That was awesome. You're very smart.
Oh, but I do talk a lot about this stuff in school, so I think I've had some practice. I think that's the only thing.
Well, see, that's where I knew you'd be good.
it's fun. But you are an excellent interviewer. I mean, not to be too, you know.
No, please, go on.
I think that's been one of the great privileges of my life in the last few years, is being surrounded by very, very emotionally intelligent, talented people who have a sense of humor. I value all those things. Talent being maybe the least, because talent is a weird word. It's, you know, it's too much pressure, I think. But I think,
passion.
Yeah. Maybe. Passionate, emotionally intelligent, and, people who don't take themselves too seriously. I like all those things.
Me too.
You have all those things.
Oh my gosh. Well, we should have another super strong coffee together one day, and I'll infiltrate myself into the cool California crew.
Yeah, well, you know, we're not, well, you know, and maybe we'll all take some road trips your way too.
Oh, that would be amazing. You guys would like it here.
I know, if they'll let us in, because I know that
Oh, that's right. I'll sneak you over the wall.
Okay, the wall.
Yeah, we're building one on our side.
I'm sure.
No, we'll take you all. Come on up. We'll have the maple syrup and smoked salmon just waiting for you.
Perfect.
Well, thank you so much for doing this. That was so interesting. And I'm sorry I hounded you all week to get you, but I'm so happy because, yeah, you go up tomorrow night.
Yep. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. And I'll hopefully see you next time I'm in LA.
All right. I make it a promise. Yes.
Okay. Deal. See you then. Okay. Bye.
Bye.
So smart. I love interviewing good teachers. They are so insightful and generous with their information. I cannot wait for you to see all of Aaron's work and his beard and his tattoos. So pop over to my site, thejealouscurator.com, to see the post that goes with this episode. Thank you so much to Aaron for taking time out of his always very busy life to chat with me. Thanks to Saatchi Art for supporting yet another episode. And of course, thank you for listening. There will be more Art for Your Ear next weekend. See you then.